I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about summer food programs. On average, many children in America and Indiana don't know where their next meal might come from, particularly when school is out of session. Today, we're going to talk with people who are trying to meet this challenge. Joining me for this important discussion will be Dr. Patricia Rogan of the IUPUI School of Education, Siobhan Carey, Director of Dining Services for Chartwells of Fayette County Schools, and Jason Yanis of the community group Waldron Will. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about feeding Hoosier children over the summer. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, I've got in the studio with me three guests who are trying to meet this challenge. They are Dr. Patricia Rogan of the IUPUI School of Education and the Central Indiana Education Alliance, Siobhan Carey, who's Director of Dining Services for Chartwells of Fayette County Schools, and Jason Yanis, who is the director of a newly formed community group, Waldron Will, in Shelby County. Welcome to all of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Well, let's talk about how large a problem this is first. I mean, how many children are either going without food or not knowing exactly where their next source of food is going to be, nutritious meals, once school gets out? Pat, I'll start with you.
Thanks, John. I think that it's important to provide perhaps a quick backdrop that provides the context for the issue in Marion County and in Indiana. And certainly as we track some of the quality of life issues that we face as a community and as a state, we know that those quality of life issues are all interconnected, whether it be employment or unemployment, access to affordable, accessible, and safe housing, health care or lack thereof, transportation, and environmental factors such as safe and healthy environments, lacking pollution, and having access to healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that we look at some of the issues that impact food insecurity for the youth in our county and in our state, and some of the data that's pointing to the scope of the problem, getting to your question. In Marion County, for example, through our Education Alliance, we've identified an increasing poverty rate that's frankly stunning at the moment. In Marion County, we have almost 36% of our youth under the age of 5 living in poverty, and families, over 35,000 families in Marion County, who are living below the poverty line. So that helps to reflect the scope of the issues right now that we're facing. In schools, for example, in IPS, we have schools that have more than 90% of their students who receive free and reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. And that's why, as a district, I'm so happy that they've gone to that universal breakfast lunch program next year because of that, the large numbers. So, the summer servings program is serving more than 200,000 meals and so forth. So the scope is really quite extraordinary of need.
Do we have 36% here in Marion County? Do we have numbers for the state as a whole?
Well, I in Fayette County alone,
We're one of the highest food insecurity rates in the state, which is at 18%. But I know generally it's well over 300,000 for the state.
300,000 people
of,
in the state?
Are food insecure based on the readings that I've done.
Okay, we probably ought to define here, and I know you guys live this issue and can talk. What do we mean by when we say food insecure?
In the most common term, so people could understand, it's when they go to bed at night, they don't know what they're going to eat the next day.
Okay.
So just within one day, they don't necessarily know where their next meal is coming from.
We probably also ought to explain what Chartwell's is, too.
Sure. Yeah. Chartwell's is a food service management company, and we're based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And we are basically contracted to come into school districts and help run their food service department. And so we come in and we assess the culture, the community, and figure out what each community and each school district needs. And so then that's where we kind of customize and design different programs to help the community.
Mm-hmm. And Jason, is this a problem also in Shelby County?
It is a problem in Shelby County. I don't have the numbers like these ladies do. That's a little too high level for me. I do know that if it's one child, it's too many.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we just have to continue working until that's gone.
Okay, and what is the focus of Waldron Will?
Well, Waldron Will is a little broader focused than just feeding the kids, but as a small town with a small school, it's important that we save that community, and the school being the base of the community and the children, of course, being the base of the school, that's where we have to start. And the first thing that we can do as a community is come together and make sure that all of our children have all the essentials that they need. There's no reason why any community can't come together and do this.
We are talking about feeding Hoosier children over the summer when they're out of school. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, let's talk a little bit about the consequences of this, what it does first to the kids, and then, you know, ultimately what this does to communities over the long haul. Siobhan, I'll start with you.
Well, when we, Chartwell's came into Fay County, it was 2011-12 school year, and within about 3 months, I really started to see what the community needed. You know, it's an old, it's a former factory town. It's a dying factory town. They used to have, you know, 20 plus factories at one time, and now there's only just a couple, a handful. Their main factory that employed more than 4,000 jobs shut the doors, I think, over 5 years ago. So really, when we came in, it was, well, what can we do for the community? These kids are starving. They're hungry. And in years past, the district had done a summer feeding program, but just in the schools. And so I said, well, you know, this is a rural community. These children can't come into the schools for many different reasons. One is either their parents are working, they don't have the transportation. The other issue is, you know, the stigma. If they're coming into school, you know, people are going to know. So we decided that, well, what if I did a food truck? Let's think out of the box and we'll bring the food to them. So I, with very little investment, and I had a truck in the district, I basically said, okay, well, we'll pack up our coolers, we'll make all our sandwiches and fruits, vegetables, milk, and we'll put it in the coolers and we'll take it out. So it was a very bare bones, you know, operation. And to our surprise, it was just overwhelming.
How many people did you end up serving with?
Well, our first year, we did over 11,000 meals. And then our second year, we did almost 13,000 meals. So we grew within a year 17%.
Okay. And is this then the third year you're looking at?
We are now in our third year. And one of the things that we added to it was we partnered with Gleaners Food Bank here of Indiana. Mm-hmm. And so that the children would come and have one of our meals. And then when they would leave, before they left, they would get a grab-and-go meal that Gleaners Food Bank would provide for us. And then they got to take that home with them. So then they had some food to eat in the evening time.
Pat, and I try not to talk about my own experience on this show, but I volunteered some years ago at an IPS school that was one of those 96%, I think, students who were on either free or reduced lunch. and breakfast programs. And one of the things I noticed is that when the students came back from a holiday break, I mean, they practically sprinted to the cafeteria because they were so hungry. And I should say, this was 20 years ago, the food was not good. It wasn't the allure of what they were being served. You could tell they just hadn't had anything to eat at all. What does that do to a kid? What does that do to the educational experience of that child? And what does it do to his or her capacity to learn?
Sure. Well, as we know, there's a hierarchy in needs as human beings, and food, nutrition, and safety and security are basic. They're basic to well-being, cognitive, social, emotional well-being. And so the youth who are worried about where their next meal come from will not be in a prime status to learn. It does impede, of course, their attention and their social-emotional status and, of course, their physical health.
Have we been able to chart any is there data on what the performance levels are for children in schools like that where you know, it's clear that often they aren't getting enough food?
Absolutely, whether it be, you know, quantitative data or anecdotal qualitative mm-hmm. data coming from teachers and other caring adults in that child's life. Absolutely. And that's why so many of our classroom teachers are using their own money to mm-hmm. provide food. That's why schools have even gone above and beyond the breakfast and the lunch to be providing dinners and to providing the backpacks and sack lunches to food to take over the weekends.
Jason, how did you get involved in this?
Well, for me, this all started about 2 weeks ago, and I'd come home from a trip and had seen some things that impacted me personally. And when I got home, I asked my kids what sorts of things they had going on in their school, and they brought to my attention this backpack program. And I just want to emphasize that I wasn't aware of that. I lived my own life, mm-hmm. and I took care of my family and my career, and that's what my focus was. And that kind of woke me up to think, you know, that our small community had 15 or 20 kids going home on Fridays with backpacks with food in them so that they could eat on the weekend.
Where was the trip? I can tell this moved
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. And what was the experience that you know, prompted you to ask the question in the first place?
For me, it was just seeing some people at slot machines at any hour of the day with kids standing beside them just staring off into the blue. Just kind of hit me. Kids standing on the street corners with their parents looking for food and money.
And that you saw that in Vegas, and you came back and asked your kids. And were the kids, your children, mm-hmm. then aware of who these kids were?
They are, yes.
Was there a stigma? I mean, were they?
No. I think that our small community and all communities, I think we've all done a great job with bullying. But I think that as a student that has to pick that backpack up and explain it to the other children what it's for, what they're going to do with it, that it has to impact them.
We are talking about food insecurity, about making sure that Hoosier children are fed, particularly in the summer months when they are out of school. If you would like to join the conversation, please do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Siobhan, how did you settle upon the idea, you know, of taking the food to the children? I mean, it seems like one of the challenges that I am hearing here is removing the stigma from saying, I'm hungry, you know, or my children are hungry, I need help.
You're absolutely correct. And so when I proposed the idea to the school board, I didn't necessarily, I approach it as, yes, there is a need in the community, but it's just not for needy children. It's for all children. And so the truck, because we were the first food truck for summer feeding in the state of Indiana. It was something new, trendy, what's going on in all different major cities across the country. And it was just for children. So it was something, it was something that the children would want to approach. You know, we put fun graphics on it. We put music on it. So it plays through the neighborhoods almost like an ice cream truck. And the kids loved it. And so no child was afraid to come up to the truck just because they thought that they would have, you know, a stigma attached to it. And so and we would even have parents that would say, oh, you know, I don't need that for my child. We're not in need. And I would just explain to them, you know, it's for all children. It doesn't, you don't have to be in need. You know, your tax dollars are paying for it.
You've already paid for it.
You might as well embrace it.
Yeah.
And so and with that, that was kind of like the birth of the food truck, and everybody loved it.
We are talking about food insecurity here on No Limits. My guests are Dr. Patricia Rogan, Siobhan Carey, and Jason Yantis. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about feeding Hoosier children over the summer, dealing with issues of food insecurity. My guests are Dr. Patricia Rogan of the IUPUI School of Education and the Central Indiana Education Alliance, Siobhan Carey, who's the director of dining services for Chartwells of Fayette County Schools, and Jason Yannis, who is the director of the newly formed community group Waldron Will in Shelby County. We were talking really about, just before we went to the break, about sort of dealing with the stigma of saying you're hungry, or, you know, in this country, this society, this culture, the stigma to some degree of saying you're poor. And we tend to think of that as a more isolated circumstance than it really is. Pat, you're shaking your head so hard right now that could you give us some numbers on how the scope of the problem just in Indiana in general?
Yes. I think that some of the data does reflect the scope of the problem, such as the statewide free and reduced lunch percentage, 49.1%, as reported by Kids Count 2013. And knowing that the recession hit so many families very, very hard across the state, and the example I gave earlier of IPS just saying we are opening it as universal breakfast lunch program because the need is so high.
And is that was the IPS thing? Was that also an attempt to deal with a problem that Siobhan was talking about, the stigma issue of saying this is for everyone?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Don't feel bad about
that's
this.
That's it.
Everybody come out. You know,
that's
come
it.
One, come all.
Mm-hmm. You've got it.
And to deal with that. How much of this do you think, I'm going to stay with you for a second, Pat, and I do want Siobhan to talk a little bit because there are pockets of the state, Fayette County being one of them. We tend to think of poverty and hunger as urban issues. Actually, we'll go with that right now, Siobhan. I'll come back to Pat on my larger point in a minute. And you've already alluded to the fact that that's not the case. Fayette County is probably ought to tell people who don't have a map handy, where is Fayette County?
Fayette County is it's about 70 miles east, actually probably about 60 miles east from Indianapolis, right off of 70 going east, right past Newcastle in Connersville, Indiana is the main city there in Fayette County. And I'm not actually originally from Indiana. I'm from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I first moved...
No poverty there.
Well, you don't see it as much.
Yeah.
But there is lots of poverty there, but you don't see it as much. And again, I moved to Indiana, and it was, you know, I moved to Indianapolis. Again, it wasn't really right in my face, like it wasn't in my face in New York. And then when I took the job out in Fayette County, it was right in my face. I couldn't avoid it. And so that was, and it was especially with children. You know, I have a 3-year-old daughter. I couldn't it was just something where I was like, I cannot believe these children don't have food and they don't have clothes and they're not properly cleaned. And, you know, they're sleeping. Some of them are homeless. I have kids at our high school that, you know, don't have a place to stay. And, you know, as a community, you know, Fayette is very strong. They're trying to come together and deal with each problem head on. But as I was saying to Jason at break, you know, which problem do you pick? You know, you're trying to do all of them, but which is the main one? They're all a number one issue. One of the things that, you know, Charles has done when they came in is that we did implement universal breakfast in some of our schools. We have a snack program. We have the backsack program, and that's provided by Gleaners. So every elementary school has a backsack program on Fridays. And we're, you know, that's like almost 50 kids per elementary, and that's six elementaries. We also provide a supper program, you know, for the after-school enrichment. So, I mean, there are some schools literally feeding children breakfast, lunch, snack, and dinner. And, you know, we're still, you know, so we're really trying to take on the fight against hunger for our kids, because I think the way we look and the way I look at it, because people will make comments to me all the time, you know, well, where are these children's parents and why aren't they working? And, you know, it's not the child's fault. It at the end of the day, we have to break the cycle. And in order to break the cycle, you need to feed these children so they can stay in school and be educated, so that they can go to college and they can get a job and then they can provide for their family.
Is that part of the mindset we have to attack, Jason? I noticed you were nodding your head emphatically when you say it's not the children's fault.
It is. It's never the children's fault. And it's not always the parents' fault. Sometimes mm-hmm. we know that it is, but I don't know how you put your finger on that, and I don't know that you can. I just know that a child doesn't have any control over whether or not they're going to have lunch money for the day mm-hmm. or whether or not they're going to come home from school and have a snack. It's not something that's within their control. And as a society, it is our most precious resource that we have, and we have to protect it. And the first thing we have to do is feed them. And I just don't understand why in a state of Indiana, especially where so much food is grown, why we have children that don't have food. It doesn't make any sense.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener, a question, and if you would like to reach out to us via Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. It says, you mentioned a service that's contracted by a school district to study this problem. Is anyone looking at it for the whole state? Pat?
Our Central Indiana Education Alliance is just capturing Marion County with the data tracking and indicators over time of the issues and whether we have trend lines going up or down. We know that there's also a collective impact effort in the northern part of the state. But other than that, we have sort of silos of information coming out of Indiana Department of Education around this type of data and around other chamber and economic development efforts, workforce development out of this silo. So I think it's really important that we continue to look at ways to put that data forward for the larger community with a statewide lens.
How much of this, I know that some economists, social scientists, have begun studying and expressing some concern about the possibility that the very nature of our economic structure in this country is changing and has been changing for quite some time, for 30 years, that it's been moving from, you know, what was a middle-class-driven economy to what the metaphor they now use is call it an hourglass economy, where there are a lot of people at the top and a lot of people at the bottom and not too many people in the middle, or at least as many anymore. Is this, to some degree, a manifestation of that phenomenon?
Absolutely. Pat. Absolutely. And as we in the Education Alliance look at educational attainment, that is very, very clear. For example, in Marion County, we've got a mere 7.5% of all adults with an associate's degree, a mere 19% with a bachelor's degree, and a mere 9.5% with a graduate degree, yet 20% have some college. And so we need to aggressively move towards building the college and career pathways from K-12 to perhaps multiple post-secondary ed options to meet the economic development needs of our community and of the individual families.
But let's assume we start by tackling this question, making sure that kids are getting fed so that they can learn and get on the path to that and focus while they are in school. Siobhan, you've implemented a program where you're taking the food directly to the kids. Now, I'm assuming, it seems to me that there are two parts to this this challenge. One is just getting food, period, to kids, but also the second part is making sure that you're getting the right kind of food to them, that, bubble gum and potato chips won't fuel them all that well. So, walk me through what you do to make sure that it what is being provided is nutritionally sound. And then how effective has this been? Does it completely solve the problem? Is really where I want this discussion to go next. If not, what steps do other steps do we need to take?
As far as the nutrition, we follow the summer food service program. That's where we receive our reimbursement from the state for the meals. And so we have strict guidelines that we have to follow to make sure to ensure that we're giving these children the proper nutrition. So, for example, one of our meals could be I work on a 1 week cycle menu, and, they'll get one day it's a chef salad, and they'll have a piece of fresh fruit, apple, banana, orange wedges. They'll get a fresh vegetable, could be celery sticks and, peanut butter or ranch, and then ranch dipping sauce, and then they get a milk. And, they basically come up to the truck, and they can have a selection. Some days I'll have, different items from them to choose, and they'll come up to the truck just like a real food truck, and they get to pick which they would like. And then they go and they sit down and they, eat their meal. And when they're done, they go off and carry on about their day. So it makes, there's some normalcy to it, and a lot, and consistency. As far as, is it going to solve the problem? I mean, we're making a good effort to solve the problem. I don't necessarily know. I think in Fayette County, we're taking it very seriously, and we're trying to implement everything possible to solve our problem. But as far as a nation, that's what Chartwells wants to do, is when we go into these districts, especially the districts in need, we're trying to get the school board and get all the administration on board and show them, this is what we can do for your community. So just let's take the first step and let's try it and see where it goes. And so I think, if more communities across the nation would just not be fearful and try, we would make a better effort to solve the problem.
We are talking about feeding Hoosier children over the summer, issues of food insecurity. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Now, Siobhan, I want to stay with you for just a second. If you're doing 13,000 meals last summer?
Mm-hmm.
You'd mentioned, actually over the break, and we probably ought to get this under the air and into the discussion, that 67% of the kids in the Fayette County schools are on the reduced or free lunch program, subsidized or in one way or the other. How many kids, 67%, how many kids are in that school system? We can do the math on that.
Yeah, sure. Currently, when we left this year, we were at about 3,800.
3,800, so we're talking about 2,500 children. So if you serve 13,000 meals over the course of the summer, that means you're feeding each of those kids about five times, if it's all of them.
So it's Monday through Friday. That's when our truck runs.
Monday through Friday. So really what I guess I'm trying to get to is, even with an aggressive approach like that, you can't be reaching that many kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even with the idea of taking the food to the kids, you're still not reaching that many of them.
It's hard to find them And to you know, that's the in the community, what I did was I drove around and I tried to at different times. So we originally started out with all lunch, and our first year, you know, we only did 11,000 meals. However, when I moved our times to serving the children later in the afternoon and doing a supper time, that's when our meals increased dramatically. What I found through, you know, research and just kind of observing the community, our children aren't getting up out of bed until 12, 1 o'clock in the day.
Got a lot of teenagers.
You got a lot of teenagers, you know, because they're not going to bed until 11, 12 o'clock at night. And so originally we would start serving at 11 and finish at 1, 2 o'clock. Now I start at 1 o'clock and I finish at 5:30 in the evening. And so we've been able to capture a lot more children. But again, I only have one truck and I have, you know, 6 stops total. Just around the community.
How far apart are those stops?
You know, it depends. Some are just a mile, 2 miles. You know, just in the actual city of Connersville. But then some you have to go out into the, you know, like I have a mobile home park that's, you know, well out into the country, and that's about 5-6 miles into the country, and that we have to go to. And that's the whole thing, is trying to find the areas where the children live, especially in those rural areas where they may live at one, you know, one house on a country road, and how are they going to be able to get to my location. So I try to find the areas that has the children, the most populated children.
And how long are you at each stop?
It ranges. My longest stop is a 45-minute stop, which is at the park. And then I have, you know, stops. Some are 15 minutes, some are 20 minutes. But it's just enough for the child to come up, grab a meal, eat it, and go back to doing what they were doing.
Jason, do you think this is a workable solution, or what other ways? I mean, I think we've arrived at consensus here that this is a problem and it needs to be solved, so we really need to start moving toward what is the solution.
It definitely is, and I think 13,000 meals is commendable.
And I did not mean to disparage that, but I meant even with that aggressive, with saying we're going to bring the food to you, you're still only providing.
That's right. Even at 13,000 meals, you can feed 52 kids 3 meals a day for 90 days, somewhere in there. What this community is coming together to do, and they're coming together very quickly, is we're going to provide them all of the essential things that they need, and we will do 1,000 different things. And we've done 2 or 3 right now, but one of the primary things that we're going to do is we're going to grow that food for them. And we're going to bring them in and show them how to grow their own food. It's teaching a kid how to fish.
Okay.
It's not just handing it to them, but teaching them.
Or to farm, as the case may be.
Exactly. Some responsibilities, some livestock, those types of things. That's what we know how to do. We're a small rural community. And that's our talent. So if we can take that talent and produce something like that, bring them in, show them how to can it, store it, eat it. They've got fresh, organic food. It couldn't be any better.
We are talking about food insecurity and feeding Hoosier children over the summer. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or on Twitter at WFYI. We've got a caller who didn't want to go on the air and wanted us to talk about the differences of hunger on children at different ages and stages of life. How does it affect an adolescent differently from a preschooler? Pat, I think that one's probably in your bailiwick.
Well, certainly we know the importance of the age birth to 5 for the development of all brain and bodily functions and so forth. And we also know the spurts, the growth spurts, and the need for calories, and those are healthy calories for adolescents and young adults. So, you know, clearly nutritious meals at all ages are critical.
Well, I think in speaking to the caller, I mean, are there different differences? Like, is there a period where we should be devoting intense concentration to getting kids fed? Is there a time that, I mean, and I realize in asking that question, I'm saying that, you know, the inverse of that, I might be suggesting that it's okay at a different period to let a kid go hungry, and I think we all disagree with that. But is there a time when when going through a period of hunger is even more damaging than it is all the time?
It's never a good time to be hungry and to not have nutritious food for any person, but certainly calorie intake and the proportion of the you know, U.S. DA recommendations for types of foods varies across the lifespan.
We are talking about feeding Hoosier children over the summer, issues really of food insecurity. My guests are Dr. Patricia Rogan of the IUPUI School of Education and the Central Indiana Education Alliance, Siobhan Carey, who is with Chartwells of Fayette County Schools, and Jason Yanis, who is with Waldron Will in Shelby County. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about feeding Hoosier children over the summer when they are out of school, issues of food insecurity, basically. My guests are Dr. Patricia Rogan, who is with the IUPUI School of Education and the Central Indiana Education Alliance, Siobhan Carey, who is director of dining services for Chartwells of Fayette County Schools, and Jason Yanis, who is the director of the newly formed community group Waldron Will in Shelby County. Just before we went to break, we were talking about whether there are differences in how hunger affects preschool kids as opposed to adolescents. There's another way to approach that. Do you have to, Siobhan, I'm going to throw this one to you. Do you have to prepare different meals for different age groups? How, why, and what are the differences in what you have to do?
Well, just in general, during the school year, most, you know, public schools are receiving reimbursement from the federal government for meals. And so the USDA has come in and they have changed. They've made a lot of different regulations and changes as far as the amounts. And so, you know, they have different calorie amounts for a K through five versus, you know, six through eighth, and then, you know, ninth grade through 12th grade, they have different calorie limits as well. As far as you were asking, you know, which is the most important age, I think just in general, zero through five, that's just their most important years of growth and brain development. And if you're going to give this child a chance, you really need to make sure that these young preschool kids are being taken care of and that they develop a metabolism and they develop an immune system. They need all of these nutrients to do that. And so a lot of times we see, you know, in preschool, you know, we run Fayette County has a very large Head Start program, and that's, you know, 3 to 5 year olds, and they're trying to get them ready to go into kindergarten. And, you know, the main focus is the nutrition. You know, are they making sure that we're providing all these meals for them? Is teaching them basic table manners, you know, just how to eat and how to. Charles' main goal with coming into school districts is about choices and educating these kids about different fruits and vegetables and what to put into your body and giving them options. You know, they don't always have to go for French fries and pizza because that's kind of the society we live in. It's a fast food nation.
Lot of empty calories.
And a lot of empty calories that are not fueling their bodies or their minds. And and so we provide fresh fruits and vegetables, and we try to bring in different things. I do chef tables, you know, once a month, and food focuses, you know, last month was, stone fruits. So we brought in, you know, different peaches and plums and apricots, and teaching, you know, some of these children didn't know what an apricot was, and explaining to them where it's from and how it tastes and giving them samples of it. And then so that next time it's on the menu, they'll choose it because they remember, you know, learning about it. So that's, you know, that's our main focus.
Do you vary the meals at all, or is there an option to step up the food that is provided based on the child's level of activity? I mean, I'm thinking in my own case, I've got a son who's a teenager and is involved in several sports, and as a result, you know, is burning through, you know, probably 4 or 5,000 calories a day just in terms of his output. we focus on providing, mm-hmm. you know, nutritionally balanced meals for him. But even with that, and, you know, we're fortunate he's able to eat regularly mm-hmm. and, you know, has never really known hunger. But even with those circumstances, there are times when I feel like I'm putting the plate in front of him and I better get my arm back or he'll start gnawing yep. through that. So,
and we face that challenge, especially in our high school. Those ninth grade through 12th grade, those kids can eat.
Oh, yeah.
And especially the athletes, the swimmers, the football players, baseball players, you know, and that's something that, you know, is a challenge for us because we're following the USDA regs and, you know, only what we can give them as a portion size. But you know yourself, if your son's in football, he's burning, or swimming, he's burning 4,000 calories. He needs double, if not triple, the amount of food that we can just provide him at lunchtime. So, you know, we try to do different things and sell, you know, we have to sell a la carte, you know, extra entrees and stuff to the students. So that's the best we can do. But as far as providing extra food for free, you know, we basically encourage the kids stock up on the fruits and vegetables because that's basically plentiful, you know, and we can give a whole cup serving to, you know, a whole cup serving of fruit, a whole cup serving of vegetables. But a lot of times the kids just want the protein, like the, you know, the chicken or the, you know, hamburger or whatever.
Well, what I wanted to get at there is that obviously not having additional food can cut down on the other opportunities mm-hmm. that the children can pursue. We are talking about food insecurity here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Kurt, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I would just like to have the panel discuss the trend toward privatization of food services in school systems, especially school systems such as Fayette County, which is losing population, and speculate on what that would do to their efforts in trying to feed people in the off season, and the introduction of a profit motive in feeding children. And I'll take the response.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Kurt. Well, Siobhan, you want to start with that one?
Sure. You know, it's always a touchy topic when, you know, small communities decide that they want to outsource their food service program or their custodial program or maintenance program. However, with Fayette County, their food service department was profitable. It wasn't about profits. It was about nutrition and providing nutritious meals to their students. And they weren't able to do that on their own. And that's why they decided to outsource food service and bring us in. He is correct in saying that the enrollment is declining. When we originally came, it was almost 4,000 students. And, you know, the projected enrollment for next year is with preschool is about 3,700 kids. So, you know, as I've said before, it's a dying community.
Approaching a 10% drop.
Absolutely. However, because of the fact that we are such a high free and reduced percentage, we're still able to offer all of these programs that are subsidized by the government. And so really there is no loss to the district. It's a win-win. We can provide, you know, free services to the community, and the district is still able to maintain their food service program.
We've gotten a question from a listener who says, do summer food programs ever partner with community organizations to tie in literacy components? Example, free lunches and reading time, free books.
Yes.
Pat, okay.
Just to point to the summer servings program here in Marion County, which is the name or the title that goes for the summer mm-hmm. feeding program. There are many, many partners that are involved, and those include churches and camps, mm-hmm. community centers and indie parks locations, as well as entities such as the YMCA, Boys and Girls Clubs, and so forth. So many of the spots or the sites that disseminate the free breakfast and lunches also are engaged in programming mm-hmm. for youth.
Is there a component, Jason? I know you know, your approach is, in addition to trying to provide the food, mm-hmm. make it a teaching component, teach them how to provide food themselves or
Absolutely.
Grow it and all of that. I'm going to ask all three of you, is that part of the ultimate solution here to this, is to get it away from just simply being a food delivery system, because it seems that there are still some stigma, there still is some stigma attached to all of that, and say, okay, this is just going to be the educational experience here. You're going to come in, we're going to do some reading, or we're going to do some math, we're going to learn some, you know, some basic life skills That's in right. terms of growing things. Was that part of your thinking with Waldron Works?
That is everything about Waldron Will and
Will. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
My apologies.
And what we're doing is we're not just going to feed children. We're going to teach them how to feed themselves as well, a skill that they can take home with them for life. And when you touched earlier on teaching children about the food that they're eating, when you have a garden and you help that child plant that seed, big things grow. Mm-hmm. The solution isn't just giving food. It's teaching a generation how to provide for themselves. Changing a generation is what it's going to take to resolve the issue. That's how big the problem is. It's going to take something that big to resolve it.
We need to change our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I said when I came to Fayette County, and you know, we wanted change and we wanted it fast, and that's just my nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to take a step back. Many people had told me, you know, you got to take a step back and look at the big picture. Big picture is you can't change a culture in a year. Mm-hmm. It takes time. So the children that were maybe fighting the fresh fruits and vegetables and that education piece, you know, there was those kids are in high school. Those kids are just, you know, that's their independence. It's what they've already
mm-hmm.
known. We start in preschool and kindergarten, and by the time those children get to high school, they'll be making those choices. They'll be making better choices about food because they'll be more educated about it based on what we're already giving them now.
We are talking about food insecurity here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Carol, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I was driving down the road. I have a 2-year-old with me, so let's hope I can do this. And I pulled over, actually, to make the call because I'm sitting here listening, and my pragmatic mind is going, why aren't we talking about businesses, especially ones that sell food, whether it be Wendy's, Kroger's, Walmart? Where are they? Who's recruiting them? You know, my mind is going, why aren't they sponsoring a truck? Why aren't they putting somebody to work to drive that truck and create some goodwill? And we know how much money these fast food companies are making. And so who is trying to get them on board instead of throwing their money into, like, oh, we give to charity and we give, you know, whatever. I am a huge fan of Gleaners. I've been for a long time. They can do something like 6 meals for $1. So even when you go to, you know, Marsh or Kroger's and they sell bags of food, they still can't match that buying power. And, you know, I try to give, when I pay my house payment, make a payment to Gleaners, so it reminds me every month to do that. And I've actually shared that with some friends, and they do it as well. But where are all these businesses? I mean, it couldn't be that much skin off their nose to do something like that and sponsor these trucks and give somebody a job at the same time.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Carol. We'll try to get an answer for you. Jason.
Yeah, so in the small rural town of Waldron, we have several businesses that are coming together to do just that. Just as an example, Carnes Brothers Farms. It's an organic farm, and what they're doing is they're putting a program together to go pick these children up, bring them out, and help them learn how to produce some of these things and feed these kids. Several larger businesses in the area are also coming together to provide not just funds, but labor. I think that these things can be done for free. I don't think we have to wait on tax money. I just think that we need people to become aware of these issues and come together and fix it.
Siobhan.
It's a great question that she's asking, and I actually – as she talks about Gleaners, I was at Gleaners earlier today doing a training for their speaker program, just someone mm-hmm. to speak out for Gleaners. And one of the things that I learned is, you know, granted, I see what she's saying. She would like them to employ people for the communities, Walmart, and so on mm-hmm. and so forth. But you know, those big companies do give millions of food. I know we talked in general, Kroger, you know, they give millions of dollars of food to Gleaners Food Bank. So I as I agree, you know, she's just saying it's a charitable donation. I mean, they're still trying to do, you know, do their effort. However, on the same note, I have tried a lot to apply for grants through Walmart to get a new food truck because my food truck is dying, and and I'm doing everything I can to keep it going. But my real goal, what I would like to do, is to get a real food truck that has refrigeration and cooking capabilities, because I would like to be able to cook meals and do cooking demonstrations and have a salad bar and do more than just pulling my coolers off the back of the truck and giving the child a sack lunch. I would like to have more options, and I can't do that unless I get money. And so I just keep repeatedly getting turned down. So in one sense, they do a good job, you know, giving to Gleaners. But in the other sense, you know, the small little fish like myself trying to get funds for a new food truck, they've kind of not done so well.
How much do you need for a new food truck? This is your chance to pitch to an audience here.
Siobhan. Realistically, for a used food truck, I would need $60,000. For a new food truck, I would need about $100,000.
About $100,000.
So okay. Any of you generous souls out there that want to feed children, please call me.
Okay, and you probably ought to give them a way to get in touch with you. I would not suggest, though, that you give them your cell
phone. No,
number.
No.
If you've got a URL or something like that, do that.
You can contact me in my office, 765-825-7841.
Go ahead and do that again, because often don't.
765-825-7841.
And do you have a URL or someplace they could go where they can reach
you? Can look for me on Facebook. We're the Spartan Summer Food Truck, and you can message me there.
Okay, we've got just a little bit of time here, a couple of minutes. Give me one practical step. If you're someone who's been listening to this program and you're convinced this is a problem and you want to get involved and you want to try to help solve it, how do you do that, Pat?
Well, one of the points that we haven't brought to the table that I'll use my time just to bring up is that there are healthy food deserts in our communities, both urban and rural, where families have a real difficult time getting access to healthy foods at an affordable price. And so Jason had brought up community gardens, and we know that there's a lot of talk about bringing in grocery stores that aren't the high end into these accessible communities. That's really key as well for families to get what they need.
Is making sure that they have a food desert. I think that we've done a program on food deserts in the past.
That's
is within a certain geographic area if there's no source of good nutritious food. Siobhan. Solve the problem. Show us one practical step we could do if we want to make a difference.
I think it's fear. Don't fear the hard work that it's going to take. This is not an easy process. You know, you can't just, you know, come into a community and say, okay, we're just going to do this. It's time, it's effort, it's networking, it's finding the right people in the community to come together. And so it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of your time, a lot of time outside of work to come together and bring a community together to do this. But I think, you know, once you invest that time and then you'll see, you know, the outcome and the result, it fuels you to continue doing more.
Jason, you got the last word, but you've only got about 10 seconds to deliver it.
Sure. Well, I guess the best thing that I can say to you is that this solution exists, and Waldron will show you.
Okay. I'd like to thank all of you for joining me. This has been a wonderful conversation. I'd like to thank Pat Rogan, Siobhan Carey, and Jason Yantis. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.